Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. We're your destination for electrical products. Keep yourself safe and protected with new GFCI outlets from Legrand. They're available in a variety of finishes. Now at Menards, save big on all Legrand outlets and dimmer switches. View our entire selection of Legrand products today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
On the night of December 17, 2013, 20-year-old Heather Elvis goes on a first date with a former high school classmate. The two eat dinner, look at Christmas decorations together, and he tries to teach her to drive a stick shift. And then, after he says goodnight to her, Heather gets a call. It's her ex. He says he's leaving his wife and he wants her back. Within hours, Heather goes missing. This is her story.
Hi, I'm Vanessa.
And I'm Amy.
And you're listening to She Goes by Jane.
At the end of this episode and every episode, we will be joined by a special guest who will read an original poem by Amy Baker about the women we're featuring.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, Amy.
Vanessa. You're sick.
Again.
Or still?
Still.
Okay.
Not again. But still.
Okay.
Bronchitis is fun.
Oh, okay. So yeah. Vanessa is, her voice is not.
It's not great.
Not great.
This is as good as it gets right now.
Yeah. And so for the most part, Vanessa, I'm just going to talk a lot.
I'm just going to be like that silent one.
Yes. And I do feel bad though, because to forewarn Vanessa in particular, because I know that she has some particular things when we talk about episodes that will be particularly upsetting to her. So this is a more current case. So we're not back in the 1930s or
yeah.
And also, like, you know, I know that's hard for you emotionally.
It is
for me as well. But I also want to warn you, in your medicated, I'm assuming you're taking medication. I know you're just roughing it.
Okay. I'm just roughing it. Yep.
Okay, we are, there's a lot of dates and times.
Okay. I will say right now, though, that I am still having, like, very cloudy thinking.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with medication. It is just exhaustion.
Exhaustion.
Yes.
Okay, so just bear.
So I might not be able to keep track of your dates. Can you remind me
now and then? I will try to.
Okay.
So if you get lost, it is also possible that other people as well, so just...
Right.
And usually we kind of start out kind of like easing on in, but we're not doing that today either, so we're just...
So we're just going to make it like the roughest conditions possible.
Yes, while you're sick.
While I'm sick. Mm-hmm. Tons to remember.
Yeah.
A new stomach-churning case and no backstory.
Right.
Carry on.
Thursday, December 19th, 2013... You're giving me a face already.
Well, you just started with a date. You didn't say anything before the date.
Yeah, no. I told you. I warned you. Okay.
Okay, I'll be quiet now.
Okay. Thursday, December 19th, 2013, began like every other day for Terry Elvis. He's the owner of a shop called Always Stuck on You. A banner and decal shop in Market Common, which is an outdoor mall area in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And Terry was home from work, hoping to wrap some Christmas gifts when there's a knock on the door. Outside was an officer who asked Terry if he was missing a car. And looking outside, assessing his own vehicles, he says, no, they're all right there. And then the officer asks something that likely filled Terry with dread. How about a green Dodge Intrepid? Though Terry's name was on the vehicle, it was his 20-year-old daughter's car. Terry has last heard from his daughter, Heather, on December 17th at precisely 10:43 p.m. when she texted him a photo of her learning to drive stick shift in the parking lot of the Inlet Square Mall. In the photo, Heather had her left hand on the steering wheel and her right hand on the stick shift. And though she was looking forward, you can clearly see in the photo that she's smiling. Just learned to drive a stick. I'm a pro, she'd written to him. Terry had tried to teach her before, but he said it was scary to teach her. And I feel like that's exactly what my dad would have said about me. But so I feel like when he got this photo, it must have been like amusing to him. But honestly, personally, as a parent, when I see this photo, like I can just see her smile in it. There was no reason to think that anything had happened to Heather, though. He thought maybe the Intrepid had been stolen, and when he accompanied the officer to the Peachtree boat landing where the car had been reported abandoned, the sight there seemed to confirm that. Driving down the tree-lined access drive, the car came into view. It was parked sideways in a way that Terry would later say looked like someone took it and then left it there. Looking around the vehicle, though, nothing else seemed to be out of the ordinary. The windows were up. The car was off. There was no outward signs of distress. Now, Terry had a spare set of keys that he used to open the car, and he said it was a mess inside. But he'd say it was Heather's mess. Now, Terry tried calling Heather's cell phone, but it went straight to voicemail. According to him, this was highly unusual for Heather. Though he was unable to reach Heather, it sounds like this was initially handled as an abandoned car situation. Perhaps sensing it was more, though, Terry put on a pair of gloves in order to bring the car back to his house.
So this is kind of reminding us of another story we covered, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, this reminds me so much of the Rocio Sperry case mm-hmm. that we recently talked about. But, like, her husband had done essentially the same thing. Except in that case, like, he knew Rocio was missing and he was the one who found the car.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, police didn't take Rocio's disappearance seriously at all. Which is not what happened in the case of Heather Alvis, which is fortunate. Now, Heather's family immediately starts trying to locate Heather, and the police do as well. Her family knows that the last time they heard from her was on December 17th, when she was on a first date with a man named Stephen. The two had gone to high school together at St. James High School, but they didn't know each other very well. But they'd recently connected over social media, though, and Stephen had asked her out on a first date. When police contacted Stephen, he told them on December 17th, the two of them had gone on a dinner date to Bandito's restaurant and cantina in Myrtle Beach. They'd also gone and looked at some Christmas lights together, which was one of Heather's favorite things to do. And he was the one to take the photo of Heather learning to drive. It was his manual pickup truck that she was in the photo that she sent to her dad. One report says that they drove to his mother's house in Merle's Inlet, where he lived with his mom, and they watched a movie. He said he dropped her back off at her apartment, at 1:15 to 1:30 a.m., and then the two made plans to meet up later that day around 3 p.m. when he got off work. Then they shared a goodnight kiss, and he left.
I think it's really sweet that, like, she's on this date, this first date with this guy,
mm-hmm.
but she thinks to send her dad that photo.
I know.
That's just, like, got me as a parent. You know, you hope that you have the kid that will do that kind of thing, you know?
Oh, yeah, like she was having this experience and like wanted to share it with her dad, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he told investigators that he tried contacting her later that day for their date and he just never heard back from her. Police then went to a pub called the Tilted Kilt, which was a Celtic themed pub on Broadway on the beach that Heather had worked at. Though Heather had recently got a new job as a makeup artist, like a lot of her life in the recent months had centered around the Tilted Kilt. There, like the female servers all wore really tiny Celtic themed outfits. Like, I mean, the best way I could describe this is if you like combined Hooters with like a bad Scottish cosplay.
Hmm.
And both Heather and her roommate Brianna worked there. So there at the Tilted Kilt, the police speak to the staff and the manager says basically, hey, you need to go talk to this man named S. So, as is our custom, though S's name is public knowledge, that's not the name I want everyone to know at the end of this episode, and that's why I want you to know Heather's and not his. And before I get into this next bit, I really want to emphasize two things here that, like, as we talk about this first, Heather is just 20 years old, and she made some decisions, but like, I wish, like, she wouldn't have made. Like, her frontal cortex isn't even fully developed yet. Like, she is a child at 20. And second, as we get into this bit, it's possible that the salaciousness of this story will overshadow Heather, and I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, so let's keep in mind she is a 20-year-old. We do consider that an adult, but we know biologically that's a child.
Well, yeah, because, like, their decision
making. It's actually, she's not fully developed as a human. So also, I'm going to just go ahead and right now and say that I am feeling already a little bit overprotective of Heather in the sense that as you're talking to me about this, Amy. Yeah. So now that we're talking about it, I'm realizing that I'm just going to go ahead and say, like, a very badly made episode about Heather. And when I say badly done, like, they were, anytime they talked about her, they were just showing only that tilted kilt costume that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Zooming in on it, making it look like definitely she was at fault of what happened to her. Mm-hmm. And they were playing, like, the song over it. I think it was, like, that I Did a Bad, Bad Thing song over her picture.
Yeah.
Like, she's not the one out there killing anybody.
Right.
She is a young, young woman working a job in the costume provided.
Right.
So, like, I just remember watching the episode and feeling extremely upset, not only about what happened to her, but about what happened to her afterwards. Like, her family had to watch that Dateline episode and how they made her look.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's the thing, that in a lot of the reporting that I was looking at for this episode, I did not watch. There's a bunch of different programming about her, because this is actually one of the cases that we've covered that actually is more publicized. The way in that which she's depicted is just, it's heartbreaking. So the thing that I want you to know about Heather, or what I could find out about her, this is a young woman who enjoys Christmas lights. She loves her family dog. She's an artist. She loves tattoos so much that she already has 3, and she has a Pinterest board full of ideas for future ones, and who has an unfortunate but 2013 appropriate love of printed leggings and infinity scarves. Like, this is who we're talking about here.
Just a young woman trying to have fun, full of life.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So, to understand why her manager has asked police to go speak with S, we have to go back in time a little bit. In the summer of 2013, Heather was already working as a server at the Tilted Kilt, and it's there she regularly saw a man who owned his own business fixing restaurant equipment. And though this man, S, was almost 2 decades older than Heather, she was, like, desperately attracted to him. Like, she tweeted about it and about her desire to have her way with him in the mop closet at work, right? Like, you know, like what anyone would say when they found someone they were attracted to. But, like, this attraction was not one-sided at all. S regularly brought, like, Heather bagels and coffee as a treat. And for Heather, who reportedly had been in a relationship with a man before who had been abusive, like, this kind of attention, this kind of care had to feel pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, later, the kitchen manager said that the two were having a sexual encounter at the Tilted Kilt, but they were caught. And once they were, their relationship was no longer private, at least at work. But Heather experienced a lot of backlash about this relationship from some of the other women who worked there. You see, S was actually a married man with 3 children, one of whom was a teenager much closer in age to Heather than S was. Despite this, Heather and S continued to meet. It's really actually unclear, I think, in a lot of ways that he might have told her that he was separated or unhappy with his wife, right? But later, S would say that he didn't know all that much about her because they weren't just sitting around and talking, which makes it seem like their relationship was purely sexual. But we also know that S told her at some point that she could move in with him and have her work as, like, the nanny for his kids. So that doesn't seem accurate on his part, like this, like, oh, the relationship was just sexual. Now, Brianna, Heather's roommate and coworker, said that some of the other women who worked at the Tilted Kilt decided to prank call Heather at some point at work pretending to be S's wife, T. Now, sometimes I use initials to protect identity, but not in this case. Like S, I'm leaving her name out specifically so that we can continue to remember Heather's name.
From what I remember, T is not a good person.
No. Now, these coworkers do this prank call, and that had to be pretty upsetting. But not long after, though, the relationship actually does end, and quite explosively. Brianna, the roommate, will later go on to say that Heather then got a real phone call from T using her husband's phone. And this T made it clear that the relationship between her husband and Heather was over. T then placed her husband on the call where he also said it was over, and then he basically made it sound like all Heather was to him was like a booty call. Now, based on what Brianna said, Heather was heartbroken. Despite, like, what S was trying to make it sound like, it was clear that Heather was really, really into S. So she struggled for weeks with this breakup. But not only was she heartbroken, she was also scared. T kept on calling Heather's phone constantly. She would do it for hours and hours. She even started sending pictures of her and S engaged in sexual acts to Heather and videos of them together.
And, like, let's remind everyone, this is a married woman.
Yes.
With children.
Yes, in her 40s.
In her 40s. She's much older than Heather. Mm-hmm. Did Heather do all the right things? No. Is she a child compared to these people? Yes.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm not saying it's good to cheat. I'm not saying it's good to date married men. But the married men have to have some accountability. And the wives cannot act like that.
Right. Like, you know. I cannot imagine being in Heather's situation. Like, I think in a lot of ways, like, she thought that this might be a man who would, like, treat her well and that she might be with. And he's, like, making these future plans with her. And then, like, it ends and then she's just facing this, like, constant harassment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this harassment also extended to Heather's job at the Tilted Kilt. T had already made clear that her husband would no longer be doing work at the Tilted Kilt, but the separation of S and Heather just, like, wasn't enough. She even called the kitchen manager and asked him to fire Heather. She said that Heather had caused problems in her marriage and she didn't want Heather to work there any longer. The kitchen manager refused. He said, even with all this, like, Heather was a good worker and that wasn't going to happen. Around this time, which would have been October, Heather also came to work with a black eye, but no one could get out of her where she got it from. Instead, she told several stories like she hit her face with a car door or that she was jumped in a parking lot, but she just wouldn't give a straight story. To her coworkers, it was clear that she was afraid of T, particularly of her just showing up at the Tilted Kilt while Heather was working. But for Heather, a new complication might have arisen. Coworkers said that they noticed she was gaining weight and had gone up a size in her clothing. This may have been particularly noticeable given the uniforms they had to wear at work, right? Now, the manager said that Heather eventually took a pregnancy test while at work and the results were inconclusive. She'd likely need to wait and retest again to see what was what. Now, all of this history is why the manager immediately recommends that police go and speak with S when she learns that Heather may be missing. Now, when police get a chance to speak with S for the first time, it seems to be in the driveway of his residence. He lives with T and their three children, but to help situate everyone, this property is owned by his wife's parents, and there are two houses on the property. One belongs to the parents, and the other is S and T's house. This initial contact is at 2:15 a.m. on December 20th, and the conversation is quite brief, just about 10 minutes long. At this point, police are just trying to talk to anyone who might have information about Heather, so he's not a suspect. What they know is that Heather's car was found at the Peachtree boat landing, but a search of the area and an initial search of the river didn't locate Heather or provide any clues. They asked S if he'd been there to the boat landing, and he said he hadn't. When they asked about his relationship with Heather, he said, I'm trying to fix things with my wife. I'm not denying it. I'm saying I ended it. And that's kind of the end of that conversation for that night. Now, here, it's hard to piece together the exact chain of investigative events because not much of it was publicized about the case. But in fact, though Heather is missing, she's far from front page news, which was very surprising to me. But we do know that Heather's roommate, Brianna, is likely able to provide some clear clues. On the night Heather went missing, Brianna was out of state with her family for the holidays. She said that Heather called her that night and that Heather was crying and upset. Brianna said that Heather had gotten a phone call from S and that S said that he was leaving his wife for Heather. And, you know, Heather wasn't really sure what she should do. And it's clear Brianna is not thrilled by this. She largely felt that Heather was finally moving on from S, that she'd been on this like first date with this guy, and getting back involved with S was just like a bad idea. So Brianna says, like, Heather, like, look, like, sleep on it. Tomorrow we'll look at it together with like clear eyes. We'll discuss this in the morning. Now, to investigators, knowing that Heather told Brianna that she'd spoken to S that night had to feel like a major breakthrough. And since they'd spoken to S and he'd said that he'd ended things with her and made no mention of talking to Heather that night, this was huge, right? Now, looking at Heather's cell phone records, they were able to see a lot of phone activity that night. They did see that there was a call to Heather before she talked to Brianna. The call came in around 1:30 a.m. But when the number was traced, it didn't come from S's cell phone. Instead, it was a payphone at a Kangaroo gas station, and it lasted approximately 4-ish to 5-ish minutes. When they obtained security footage from that area where the payphone was located, in the grainy footage, a man who appeared to be S was on the payphone. Heather's records also showed that she called this payphone back 9 times throughout the course of the night, but never made contact with the person at the payphone. Using this, they questioned S about talking with Heather. S initially tells them that he was home all night, that in fact he was handcuffed to his bed at home.
What?
Yeah, this is according to him, his punishment for cheating is that apparently the deal with his wife is that he would be handcuffed at night and he promised to do this for 6 months to prove that he wasn't cheating.
This is insanity.
Yeah, this is where like I said, oh, some of the salaciousness mm-hmm. of the story will like kind of start to overshadow like that we have an actual missing person.
Right. Here, right.
So the police were like, you didn't call Heather that night. And he's like, no, I didn't call Heather. And they're like, did you maybe use someone else's phone, like your wife's or a payphone? To which S replied, nope. Do they still have payphones?
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So finally, Detective Jonathan Martin is like, hey, my guy. I mean, I don't think he said it that way, but, you know, we have a call from a payphone to Heather that night, and we have a video of you at that payphone. So S eventually does say he wants to start over and says he did indeed call her that night. He says that basically he made a call because she'd been leaving notes on his truck asking him to contact her and he wanted to tell her to leave him alone. He said like that's all it was.
Do we believe that?
No.
No. She's no. like out on a date with another guy and like.
Yeah. I mean like if she thought she might be pregnant, I could see.
Maybe.
You know like you're trying to get in touch with like the guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
We'll be back in a moment.
After this, S goes on his way. Like, meanwhile, everyone is still frantically searching for Heather. This, like, takes two forms, really. Like, the first is, like, a physical search, and in late December, volunteers were welcomed into this search, and they look for her along Tidewater Road. They actually make a discovery of human remains, but those are sent away, and they're determined to belong to a man.
Isn't that always weird?
Right?
Like, I think we might have talked about stuff like this before.
Yeah.
And I've definitely seen it on like other documentaries and stuff, but you start out looking for one person, you find another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 Now, people are, they're heading out on, they're on foot, they're on horseback, they're on ATV looking for her. And then like also the Tilted Kilt, they donate their billboard space to get her face and information publicly displayed. There's also the creation of a Facebook group to raise awareness about Heather. And we actually haven't talked a lot about social media and its role in disappearances, but it gets like a bit complicated in this case. In like the one sense, it helps raise awareness and get information about Heather out relatively quickly. On the other hand, as we know from seeing social media posts, you know, even in our area about crimes, like this is also where people can end up sharing erroneous information. They can miscommunicate. They can also just say things they shouldn't be saying. So in fact, T, as his wife, actually makes a post about Heather that she set to public. In it, she does say that S had an affair with Heather, uses a derogatory term to refer to Heather, and then seems to blame Heather for the affair.
Not her husband.
Yeah, I mean, instead we're going to blame the person who is not married and the person who's 20 years old.
The person who did not commit to the relationship.
Right. So, and we also know that it's later revealed that S has had at least one affair before. So.
Oh, really? So this isn't even his first affair.
Yeah. I mean, like she says, essentially, the wife ends up saying at some point that, like, she's had him followed since, like, the year before because she suspected him of having
affairs. So she's following him. She's, like.
Yeah.
Attaching him to the bed.
Right. And so instead it's like this, like.
But it's the girl's fault.
This, yeah. It's Heather's fault, right? Now, on February 21st at 7:30 a.m., which is a little over 2 months after Heather went missing, a search warrant was served on the property S&T lived on in connection with Heather's disappearance. Police spend 11 hours searching the property. That day, both S&T are arrested and booked. The next day, which is a Saturday, they're charged separately with obstruction of justice and indecent exposure.
Hmm?
Yeah, I feel like I should just really quickly say it's because S, in the course of conversation with police, ends up saying that he and his wife had sex in his truck in public.
Oh.
And that's where it comes from.
Okay. It's so weird.
So weird. Now, the next day, Sunday, more charges are filed, this time adding kidnapping charges against each of them. On Monday, they're both charged with the murder of Heather Elvis. At the time, the solicitor's office says that basically they're hoping this can go to trial quickly, anticipating as early as that summer. And then what happens is the judge puts a gag order on this case, meaning that no one, not the lawyers, not Heather's family or friends, not S, not T, can speak publicly about the case. This gag order lasts years because if there's one thing that I've learned in talking about these stories is like the right to a speedy trial is vague at best and cases like this can drag on for years. So months tick by and no one gets to know why S&T were arrested, what evidence people had, and what information might be useful in bringing Heather back home, at least, you know, not the general public. Horry County Police Chief Sondra Rhodes did say, though, about the timeline up to the arrests, "We needed to secure a good case. That's basically what it boils down to. From the very beginning, when we sat down with the Elvis family, we really did go through the process of explaining it to them. We told them that there was going to be highs and lows and disappointments on your part, and that we're not moving fast as you think we should, and that has come to fruition. There are times that we did not move as fast as the Elvis family would have liked us to." Now, there's a lot that goes on here in terms of the trials and charges, so I'm going to try to condense it here as much as possible. In May, just a few months after the arrest, T asked to bond out of jail. She claims she's pregnant, and while two pregnancy tests were conducted, neither proved conclusively that she was pregnant. And when asked, she refused to do another. And this is only important because we're going to circle back to this later. In the time that they wait for these cases to come to trial, the couple is charged with an additional crime, which is related to the misrepresentation of information that allowed them to collect Medicaid benefits they otherwise would not have received. And this is unrelated to Heather's case, but it's just part of all of the pieces that are going on. In January of 2015, so now over a year after Heather was last seen, the couple was allowed to bond out of jail and were under restrictions like having to wear a GPS monitoring, and they could not contact Heather's family or come within 5 miles of their home. S's trial was supposed to begin in May of that year, but again, that didn't happen. Instead, that summer, the couple asked to be allowed to travel to Florida so that S can go on a job interview. They cited that it was hard for him to find employment in Horry County. The judge granted this request and eventually allowed the couple to move out of state. In March of 2016, now over 2 years since Heather went missing, the murder charges against S and T were dropped. They were dropped without prejudice, meaning that in the future, if any additional evidence was found, they could be charged again.
Why are they dropped?
I have many thoughts that we'll get to.
Okay.
Now, on June 20th, 2016, S finally went on trial for the kidnapping charges, and this is where the general public starts getting a little bit more information about the case. The first witness to take the stand was Heather's supervisor at the Tilted Kilt, who was able to provide information about S and Heather's relationship. Other co-workers also testified about the same thing. Now, during the trial, the jury was shown several surveillance tapes. They were shown a video of S arriving at the Seaboard Street Walmart, where he parked his truck in the handicapped spot and entered the store at 1:12 a.m. the night Heather disappeared. Inside, he grabbed a pregnancy test and a cigar and made the purchase at 1:19 a.m. We know at 1:35 a.m. he was at that gas station making the phone call from the payphone. After that, Heather calls her roommate, Brianna. Now, during the trial, Brianna is barred from testifying about the contents of that phone call because it would be considered hearsay. After Heather tries calling the payphone 9 times and doesn't connect with anyone. So these 9 calls are throughout the course of the evening. We also know that at 3:17 a.m., she calls S's phone and talked to someone there for approximately 4 minutes. And then she made other calls to his phone, but had no further conversation with anyone. And then her phone, disconnects from the world at 3:41. In addition to those records and videos, 2 other key videos come from surveillance tapes. One is at a residence near the boat launch, and one is from a business. In one, a truck can be seen heading to the boat launch at 3:38 a.m. and then leaving 8 minutes later. In this video, it seems like you can't tell who is in the truck or see the plate number, but an expert witness testifies that the headlight patterns are consistent with a black F-150, the one owned by S&T. Later, Debbie, Heather's mom, will say of seeing this video, "I've seen this video of the truck. Watching the video of the truck going by and wondering if your daughter is in the truck, it's traumatizing. The whole thing is traumatizing." Other evidence is presented at this trial, including text messages between Heather's phone and S's that indicate the relationship, and also Heather's fear of T. In one of the messages from S's phone, it says he didn't want to talk to her anymore and that their involvement was a mistake. To which Heather responds, "You knew what you were doing. It was no mistake. I understand that this can't go on anymore. I just want to know that your wife isn't going to show up at my job." A witness from T-Mobile said that from July to October, Heather and S messaged each other hundreds of times, but this tapered off in November, with none coming from S's phone in December and 6 coming from Heather's phone in December. Another investigator said that using cell phone data and Google locations, they were able to trace her phone to her home from 1:13 to 2:31 a.m. From there, her phone shows that she went to Longbeard's Bar and Grill in Carolina Forest until 2:56 a.m. And then she makes some calls to that payphone. And her phone then shows that she may have been in the back parking lot area. After that, her phone goes down Augusta Plantation Drive, but returns to the Bar and Grill from 3:03 to 3:15. She goes back to her home from 3:16 or 3:19, or, well, her cell phone does, where she has a conversation with S's phone. Or her phone has a conversation with S's phone. And then she goes to the Peachtree Landing at 3:25 a.m. Her phone was there at 3:37, and at 3:42, her phone seems to send out its final signal at the boat landing. Now, ultimately, the jury could not agree on the kidnapping charge. 10 believed that S was guilty based on all of the evidence presented. 2 said that there was enough doubt, that the evidence was circumstantial enough that they didn't feel right about a guilty verdict. So it ends in a hung jury. To be honest, reading the reports from this trial, I could see where they felt like there wasn't, that there was enough, reasonable doubt in this case. I was wondering why this case seemed flimsier than I expected, particularly because a grand jury had said that there was enough evidence initially to bring murder charges, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I learned that one of the major hiccups in this case came in the form of one of the investigating officers on Heather's case. He said he was no longer on the force facing his own sexual assault and sexual harassment accusations. And these are separate from Heather's case, but essentially it made him a risky witness to call, that they couldn't use him. Now, the 15th Circuit solicitor Jimmy Richardson wasn't able to talk about how this impacted Heather's case because of the gag order that was in place, but he did convey that it did change how they approached other cases that he'd been working on in the past or when he was let go. Now, Jimmy Richardson did say that the intent was for them to try the case against S for the kidnapping charge again. So after this trial, S goes to jail briefly for violating the gag order, but in August 2017, he goes to trial for the obstruction charge. This charge stems from the interview in which he initially lied about the payphone. During this case, not much new information was revealed. Primarily of interest, to me at least, is that the phone records show that S reached out to Heather significantly more often than she reached out to him. Ultimately, in this case, the jury found S guilty of the obstruction charge, and he was sentenced to 10 years in prison for this. After he went to prison, S and T were each charged with conspiracy to kidnap. Heather was not named as the victim in this case, but the charges did indicate that this conspiracy happened on December 18th, 2013, the night Heather disappeared. Not long after, T finally went to trial for the kidnapping and conspiracy to kidnap charges. This case gets a bit sensationalized, but essentially what happens is the prosecution alleges that it was T who was the one who lured Heather to the boat launch that night and, you know, using S as a means to get her there, and that T is the one who met Heather there. The motive, they believe, is that T was enraged about the affair and had been harassing and stalking Heather once she learned of it. They also learned that T was particularly angered when she, you know, learned of the potential for pregnancy. Now, if we flash back a bit, S was on camera that night buying a pregnancy test from Walmart. The defense will say that this test was for his wife, but the prosecution argues that it was for Heather and that it was being purchased that night to answer the question of whether or not Heather was pregnant. There's a lot that comes out in this trial, and I fear for those who avidly followed this case, I am actually leaving a lot out here because I want to focus as much on Heather as possible. So, like, to sum up quickly, some of the things are, like, they read T's sexts to, like, this 18-year-old teenage boy, and she was trying to start up a relationship with him, which only ended when his mom confronted her, and she said she did it because she was trying to deal with S's infidelity. And also it's alleged that she forced S to get a tattoo of her name on his lower abdomen, something she claims didn't happen, that he chose to do independently. So, like, all this stuff, like,
super unhealthy.
Super unhealthy, and this all comes out, and, like, people end up focusing a lot on all those details. Like, there are plenty of other places you can really dive into S and T's relationship and all the stuff there, but, like,
yeah.
Yeah. Now, one thing that does come out on this trial is that there's a new witness, and this is T's cousin Donald. He's called as a witness. He's a bit of a shaky witness because he does have a criminal history, but he states in the trial that he went to a gathering at S&T's family property, and he said that while he was there, he saw a photo on a flip phone that belonged to S of Heather. He said in this photo to him, it appeared that Heather could no longer walk or talk, and that it was so upsetting to him that he left the party. Later, the defense played a video of Donald when he was in jail on the phone with his mom, telling his mom that there was no photo of Heather. But then he testified during this trial that he actually lied to his mom then because he didn't want her to worry. During this trial, they also called T's friend. She said that T had told her that Heather and S had only had oral sex. So the implication here is that if T learned that Heather was possibly pregnant, did she feel lied to about the nature of the affair and enraged about it? When the jury finally deliberated on October 23rd, 2018, it was nearly 5 years since Heather went missing. It did not take them long to return with a guilty verdict, and T was sentenced to 30 years on the kidnapping charge and 30 years for the conspiracy charge, both to be served concurrently. In September of 2019, nearly 6 years after Heather went missing, S went to trial again for the kidnapping charge. Remember, like, this is the one that had ended in a hung jury in 2016. During this trial, what was called a bombshell video was shown. This video comes from S&T's own surveillance cameras that they had on the property. In it, the two can be seen cleaning the interior of their black F-150 truck 5 days after Heather's disappearance. And while, yes, people do clean their vehicles, like, this video was several hours long, and the couple then burned the rags that they used for cleaning the truck in a burn pile. During this, I also learned that the couple had turned off the GPS tracking system on their truck the night of Heather's disappearance. This had been working prior to her disappearance, so it was used in November. December, it wasn't used, and then it picks back up in January. Also, it appears S removed the SIM card from his phone that night as well. And the two of them stopped the Google location tracking on their phone as well. On September 18th, 2019, S was also found guilty. He was also sentenced to 30 years. In the years since, they have both tried to appeal, but T at least has run out of attempts in South Carolina to get her case heard again. Neither has revealed what happened to Heather. Her mother, Debbie, says that this silence on their part makes it so that they are still holding Heather hostage from her family. So there are many things that I find heartbreaking about Heather's case, but one is kind of what you were touching on before, Vanessa. It's like how, when she is talked about, how her story is framed.
Mm-hmm.
But also just to me, like how little effort was done by reporters, even initially, to tell the public about who Heather was as a person. Like her father did. Her father wrote this like really like poignant piece about her, but like the reporters were not doing their diligence there. Like normally I'll see missing persons news articles where they'll talk extensively about the person so mm-hmm. people know who is missing. That doesn't really happen in Heather's case. Like in a lot of ways, article after article, like she is almost erased from the story as a person. And she's like reduced to being like a victim in this story in the best cases or in the worst. Like you were talking about this innuendo that she somehow bore responsibility
mm-hmm.
for having this relationship. Like she's responsible for her own disappearance and what's likely her murder, right?
Right. They're almost framing it like she did something to deserve it.
Yeah.
And that's not.
No.
That's not a thing.
You know, and I thought like this might be just how I was reading it because, again, I always want cases like Heather's to focus more on the person. But mm-hmm. in 2016, Heather's sister, Morgan, echoed my thoughts. She said, in March 2016, this is when some of those charges were dropped and it was getting closer to trial the first time. Morgan said, it's become that she's no longer a person. She's a face on a poster. She's a name that is said in mourning or pity. And I hate that because it's been so long. It's now just something that happened. And really, I don't want Heather to be just a name or just what happened to her, but I also don't want to forget that she is still missing. Every time her mother, Debbie, was interviewed about how she felt about the many trial developments or the details that were coming out, like she said that she was leaving all of that to the lawyers and that she wanted her focus to be on finding Heather. For many years, and still, people keep vigil for Heather. They met monthly at the Peachtree boat landing to pray and hold her in their hearts. And on the anniversary of her disappearance, her family used the vigil to launch something larger to create and hold space for other people who are missing their family members, whether by disappearance or suicide or some other loss. Now, Brianna's, who's Heather's roommate, she's a mom and she also became a firefighter because she wanted to be in a field that helped people. Morgan, Heather's sister, is now a victim's advocate working to support families and to enact change in how responders are trained in handling families of the missing, particularly in the first 48 hours of a disappearance. Like she particularly talks about like the trauma that the families experience, often unintentionally, from investigators and mm-hmm. searchers, right?
And that first 48 hours is huge.
Right. So it's like at this critical time period and the families know that and it feels like a ticking clock, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she wants better training so that families can receive better care. And so I've been thinking a lot about Heather and what glimpses I can see of her. She's like that girl who went on a missionary trip to Costa Rica when she was a teenager, who took such pride in helping people while there. She's that girl with a messy car and a compass tattoo and a turtle tattoo. That girl, Brianna said, that could always make her friends laugh. And I think about what her friend April wrote on the Find Heather Elvis Facebook page, where she said, she's come to be everyone's sister, cousin, niece, child. She's at that age where you're going into adulthood and you're finding out who you are, where you're going, and what you want to do. Your horizon is so open.
We are now going to listen to Amy's poem, Empires, about Heather Elvis, 22, missing since December 18th, 2013, from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I want to know what crown you would wear. I would weave one of gardenia and place it in your dark hair, or forge one from burnished gold, the filigree snagging on your fingers. I want to see the dark bend of that river. I could look for you there, pass your car on the edge, or find you on these cold winter nights as water laps onto the shore. I want to know what kind of empire you would build. I would craft one from sand, pushing those small crystals into diamonds, or resurrect all the women lost into these shadowy places on nights we won't have to remember. I want to see where you disappeared. I could trace your journey, find each pathway you took, or follow you into the dark, watching for that glint of light on the still, still water.
For more information about our show or to check out other shows on the network, please visit evergreenpodcast.com. Bye, Vanessa.
Bye, Amy.